What's good? What's good? What's good, fans? Thank you guys for tuning in to week 96 of the Voice of the Fans podcast. This is your man, Cam. As always, I got my man, Cleavon, joining me from the Northwest. How's it going, Cleavon?
Going great up here, Cam, or as best as it can be. How about yourself?
Well, we're doing about the same down here in mild weather to Los Angeles. It's been really nice weather here the last month or so. June took it easy, peaked up in first week of July, but now we got a cool day. So I'm enjoying all these cool days where it stays under 80 degrees. It's awesome. Fans, this is July 9th. We're just a little bit closer to some live action. July 9th, 2020. It is week 96. I want to thank everybody listening to us, however you choose to listen to us, whether it's Spotify, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or even Rise Radio being pumped out of Vegas every Saturday afternoon. We want to thank you guys for tuning in to the podcast. Just a little idea of what's coming up this week. In this week's show, we got Mahomes. Talk about Mahomes getting that bag. Talk about the New Jersey Nets. Or, excuse me, the Brooklyn Nets signing Jamal Crawford, Jay Crossover, back in the game. We're even going to touch on Maya Moore, making her greatest assist off the court. And then, obviously, we got this day in history, and we got some NFC West predictions we're going to end the show off with. So, if you're ready, sit back, get comfortable. Let's do this, Cleavon. Week number 96, July 9. When you think of the number 9, who first comes to your mind, or who wore it best?
The first person that comes to my mind is one of the greatest passing quarterbacks of all time, Drew Brees. Started his career over in San Diego. Had a brief audition with the Miami Dolphins, wanting to be their franchise quarterback for a long time.
Oh, wow, okay. They denied to give him a contract, saying he was medically unfit to play.
Fortunately, he found a home down there in New Orleans and was able to resurrect his career, even won a Super Bowl. So that's the first person that comes to mind. Number 9. Who wore it best? Probably Gordie Howe, of the NHL, of the Boston Bruins. But he probably wore it the best. Of the Detroit Red Wings. Probably wore it the best, but the first person that comes to mind is Drew Brees. His ability to resurrect his career after being shunned by the Miami Dolphins and really making the most of it.
Aren't you banned from talking Dolphins?
Is extraordinary. The way he was raised, the way he was able to rise like a phoenix from the ashes.
Oh, my goodness, Keisha. So that just tickled you, didn't it? That tickled you. You couldn't wait to bring that up, could you?
I'm saying. That's the first person that comes to mind.
Okay. So you don't know nothing about Norm Johnson then? Place kicker in Seattle Seahawks history. You don't know anything about that guy.
Well, Steven Hauschka is the greatest place kicker in the history of the Seattle Seahawks franchise. But yeah, I know all about Norm. Norm was a steady Eddie, Mr. Consistency from there. From 50 yards, Norm was good to go, especially in the dome. Yeah, remember Norm?
Okay, and then Mr. Hits, the Hit King, Mr. Ted Williams. I guess you don't know anything about that guy either.
No, he was the last person to hit 400, and that's extraordinary. And that was quite some time ago. Lots of people have floated with the 390s, but never ended the season at the four number. So yeah. He's definitely one of those prominent figures that wore number 9.
What about the number 96? I think there's really only one guy. Well, there's a couple guys, but 96, who wore that number best, or who comes to your mind first?
Well, for me, residing here in the 206, it's got to be, you know, that Hurricane Cortez Kennedy, you know, Hall of Famer, Defensive Player of the Year, just a menace on the defensive line. He's the first person that comes to mind, and in my opinion, he's the one that wore it the best.
Yeah, there's no argument there. Sean Jones actually comes to my mind, actually, because I met the dude who was just, man, he's two of you. He's literally two of you. With hands twice the size of yours, it was just absolutely amazing how big the dude was. Big defensive lineman for the Packers. Who else he played for? I think it was for the Eagles. Packers? Who else did he play for? But
he had some run with the Oilers. I believe he had some run with the
Oilers, that's right.
As well. But yeah.
That's right. The Oilers. Oh my goodness. He was a huge dude right there, man. Well, talking about somebody from the 206, man. Jamal Crawford finally gets a call up to the Brooklyn Nets to join the team down there in the bubble in Orlando. What's your thoughts on Jamal Crawford getting a call up? And I hear KD orchestrated this, is now putting together the team, calling the shots there for Brooklyn. What's your thoughts on that as well?
Well, I'm definitely happy for Jay Crossover. It's been about time. I'm sure in his heart of hearts, he wished it could have been a little bit more of a contender that he was going to, most notably the Los Angeles Lakers, for whatever reason. They didn't, didn't come calling for whatever reason. But he's definitely shown over the course of his career that he's a valuable asset that can contribute at any given time with big threes and just veteran leadership. So it's unfortunate that he was having to sit out as long as he was, but his resume and his success speaks for itself. So I'm sure he'll do great things over there in Brooklyn. I'm not quite sure if he will be the difference maker. Actually, I'm quite sure he won't be the difference maker with regards to winning a championship, but will definitely contribute and help those youngins get a little better, a little bit more seasoned, learn how to be a little bit more professional, and hopefully go more about their craft going forward in the right way.
Well, yeah, they're kind of behind the eight ball, man. They had a few players come down with the coronavirus, a couple players decided not to go to the bubble, and already had the injuries with KD and Kyrie. So they're kind of challenged. They had only eight spots on the roster field, so they needed some bodies. And you know, who better to call than the Rifleman, Jay Crossover, to come and put up some shots and score some buckets here in this bubble. Let him get some run and let him go on a good note. Now, you said the Lakers needed them, so are the Lakers, are they going to try to sign Dwayne Wade next because they need more players or what?
You know, I don't think Dwayne Wade at this point in his career is probably a good option. You know, he is, you know, he's Hollywood now. He's a celebrity. You know, he's a personality, if you will. I think the Flash days are long behind him. I'm not quite sure how much concentration and contribution he has left in that body of his. But he's friends with LeBron, and you know he knows how to win, three-time champion. So I understand where you're going with that, but I think it's probably passing by his NBA career as far as, you know, trying to resurrect that and, you know, kind of get that the juices flowing, if you will, and get back in there and try and make another run at it.
Sound like you feel the Lakers need a little help right there. That's what it sounds like.
No, I'm confident with the roster that the Lakers have for now. Of course, we don't know how the coronavirus COVID-19 is going to affect the roster going forward. But
yeah,
you know, if they're healthy as is, I'm okay with that. How they look right now.
J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters, you're confident with those guys, huh? Okay, I like that. Let's see your boy work magic with that squad. What's your thoughts on the players down there in the bubble putting the messages on the back, on the back of their jerseys, rather? You know, there's a few different messages out there. The league is kind of says you can do it, but then they're kind of monitoring the free – says they can have free speech, but then they're kind of monitoring the speech. So is it really that free? Like, how much – how far can it go? What's your thoughts on this whole scenario? If the players should be putting names or different names and slogans on the back of their jerseys, or should they just be rocking with their names? What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the fact that the league is allowing this to happen somewhat shows a willingness to kind of participate in the Black Lives Matter movement. It's not just their name. You know, there are options to it. So that in and of itself is somewhat of an example of how they're trying to, you know, not concede, but rather be open-minded with regards to the Black Lives Matter movement, understanding kind of the demographic of their league. At the same time, I think it's a little misguided. Get to say whatever you want. It's not like, you know, the XFL back in the days, just throw whatever you want on the back of your jersey and that'd be you. It's more along the lines of trying to be, you know, somewhat respectful of, you know, some of the tragedies that have happened over the last couple of months in this country. So I respect the fact that they're trying to acknowledge that. How it will go over, it's hard to say. But they are at least giving the players the option of doing that. If you know as a league that's doing that. So that in and of itself shows a little bit more of a concession than other leagues have been willing to do.
What do you think about the Black Lives Matter being painted on the court? Are you good with that, or is that too much involved in basketball? What's your thoughts on that?
I think that the NBA speaks to a different audience. Than the other sports do, so I'm not surprised that they were okay with having that type of display of the Black Lives Matter movement. I think that in the NBA, the sentiment and the thoughts and the movement resonates with the players a lot more than other sports. So I think they're well within their rights to do that. And it's a gesture, again, that kind of speaks to the partnership between ownership and the players that other sports don't have. So I'm okay with it.
Okay. I don't mind the painting on the court. I don't mind it, but at some point I do. If that's all you do is the paint on the court, that's good. I mean, we want to see some, or I would like to see some legitimate action, some legitimate deals and processes in place that allows more unity in the boardroom. More diversity in the boardroom. I think that's what is missing. So I don't mind it on the court, but I just want to see some action behind that and not just on the court. The names on the back of the jersey is a unique thing. But trying to monitor that is kind of weird for them. So that's challenging in itself, as I know. But like you say, I applaud them trying to do something rather than nothing. And we'll see how that all plays out ultimately as this bubble progresses and proceeds on. Dwight Howard decided he's going to go down to the bubble. What does that, him going to the bubble, what does that mean for the Lakers?
It means they have another big body, another presence of someone that has experienced NBA championship basketball. Yes, the Orlando Magic went to the NBA championship in 2010. Perhaps you don't recall.
2009. Did they win any games in that playoff, in that championship? Do you recall?
I do recall Dwight Howard getting NBA championship experience. Wasn't that the question? That was what I said.
Okay.
I don't think I stuttered, uttered, or muttered, but that's fine. He gives him another big body with NBA championship experience.
Okay.
Going forward, that can, you know, possibly do some things, be a contributor to an NBA championship team. So, yeah. The more the merrier, all hands on deck at this point. We're not quite sure how the coronavirus is going to affect things going forward. So, yeah, to have as many players as possible with, unique skill sets that can help win a championship is positive, if
so
that was your question.
So since we know this is essentially LeBron's best and final chance at winning another championship, what was that conversation like with LeBron and Dwight Howard?
Well, I'm not sure, Ken, if this is his, last chance to win a championship, the way that you're phrasing it or putting it, or last best chance or whatever
you're trying to say. Last best chance, yeah, that's it. You got it right.
Okay, well, I don't necessarily agree it's his last best chance.
I
think he's got 3 to 4 good – good seasons and, perhaps 2 great seasons.
Get out. Come on. Okay. Okay.
Was he or was he not in the NBA MVP discussion this year?
I mean,
I think it came down to him and Giannis, didn't it?
He might have been in your MVP discussion, but so it sounded like you.
Oh, wow. Just my MVP discussion. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, then, I'm not quite sure, how the rest of the, league, world, and country, sees LeBron James, but I'm not quite sure this is his last best chance. But, yeah, this is a good opportunity. But, again, it's a very unique situation, so I'm not going to put it all on him to win it, as an all or bust. Let's not forget, this guy has played for the NBA championship 9 times. So.
Right. And exactly my point. I mean, that the sun has to set sooner or later, right?
Yeah, it's going to be later than sooner at this point, though.
Okay, so you haven't just as a side, you haven't playing with his son when his son get drafted into the league. You haven't playing with his son by then playing on the same team, right?
Would not be surprised if the Los Angeles Lakers orchestrated a trade to have Bronny playing on the team with LeBron. Yeah.
Goodness, and you're gonna go so far to say that that's a contending team too, right?
I can't foresee what the roster's gonna look like at that point, Ken. But I'm assuming it will be at least him and Anthony Davis and some other quality pieces to go along with the learning tutelage of Bronny. So we'll see.
Yeah.
That's way down the line, Cam. I think he's only a freshman in high school, so, pump the brakes a tad bit. I think you're putting a little bit much on that guy right now.
Well, no, you said he's got 3. You said LeBron had 3 to 4 good years. That's what you said.
I did. So, yeah, it potentially could happen, but again, he's only a freshman in high school, so for crying out loud, let's not, try to project all that type of stardom, upon him at this point. Let's just let the process play itself out, for crying out loud, man.
Oh, now you want to.
He's a ninth grader. He's a ninth grader.
Now you want to say, let's ease up and pump the brakes on the James hype, huh? The James gang hype. Now you want to say, let's pump the brakes. Come on, man. Which is it? Is your guy going for number 10 finals in a row, or is he going to win the championship? Is this his final season, man? Come on, make a prediction. Is this your dude,
though? Sure. Yes, I think he would win a championship this year. No, I don't think it's his final season in the NBA. And yes, I do think that eventually he will be playing in the league at the same time as his offspring. whether they play together, that's you know, completely unpredictable. Who knows? We don't even know if that's what Bronny really wants to do. He may decide as a sophomore or junior in high school, which is well within his rights, he has other interests and wants to do something else.
Oh, wow.
So we don't know. We don't know all that.
He's going to be a movie producer.
He has opportunities in front of him, Cam, that we don't know about. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. With the
and that we haven't experienced. The world is his oyster. I mean, for crying out loud, his dad's LeBron James.
He's going to be a movie director for Spring Hill.
We don't know. It's hard to predict what a ninth grader will do, right? Was your life plan all set and solidified when you were in the ninth grade?
Oh my goodness! It wasn't planned on this. Debate LeBron.
Did you have unlimited resources at your disposal in the ninth grade? Because he does.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Mr. Cleveland James.
I mean, we'll see what he has to offer. We're not sure yet.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not sure yet. He does have a lot. He does have a lot of opportunities in front of him. But I it's far fetched thinking from doing anything other than playing in the NBA. Whether it's actually his dream or not, I think at very least he's going to get to the league, and we'll see what happens from then on. But Cleveland, let's take a break here right now. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Patrick Mahomes getting that bag. And let's talk about, is he worth it? Or not only is he worth it, what other players, if you had an open draft, is there any other players that you would take ahead of Patrick Mahomes? Answer that question when we come back. All right, Mr. Cleveland, thank you once again, fans, for tuning in. Let's hear what Cleveland has to say about Mr. Patrick Mahomes getting that $450 million size bag. What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's a tough contract, Cam. I think it makes a lot of assumptions that, sound good. You know, in 2020, but going forward, it's extremely difficult to anticipate. I mean, it assumes that your relationship with ownership will continue to be great. It assumes that you'll be okay with this coach and the next coach and perhaps the next coach. It assumes that salary cap will remain at the same level of acceleration that it has. It assumes that Patrick Mahomes is going to stay healthy and have a productive career. It assumes that the Chiefs organization is going to continue to put high-caliber quality players around him to allow him to be successful. It just makes too many assumptions, in my opinion, to have a contract that long. Shorter contracts are much better for the player. Long contracts always favor ownership. The player gets the stability. The player gets the peace of mind that, you know, the money will always be there. But again, even that's in other sports where the contracts are guaranteed. This is not a guaranteed contract, and it makes the assumption that neither side will get tired of the other side for 10 years, and that's just a long time to do that.
Wow. Mr. Pessimist here, Patrick Mahomes, he gets the richest contract in North American sports history, and Cleveland says it offers a lot of assumptions. The one thing I do, to your point, I would say that why not sign the 4, 5, or 6 year deal? So when you're 30, you have a chance to come back to the table and hit him again with a big contract. That's the one thing I would question about this deal. Outside of that, do you think Andy Reid is retiring anytime soon with Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback? I would venture to guess not. Do you think the ownership is going to have a problem with Mr. Patrick Mahomes? And I'm not sure how deeply, you looked at the clauses in his contract, in his exact words, well, yep, it's football and video games for the next several years for me. Do you think somehow the ownership is going to get upset with the golden child who won him a ring already and is going to keep him relevant for the next 10 years minimum? You think the ownership is going to have a problem with that? I think not. Do you think, again, the coach is already in place? Do you think the next coach that comes, if Andy Reid was to retire or leave in the next 2 to 3 years, do you think he's not going to be consulted about who should be the next coach? I think probably so. So some of those assumptions is Mr. Cleveland just being a pessimist and trying to
this is not me being a pessimist. This is not me being a hater. This is not me trying to look at, like, I'm the dark side of the contract. This is me being a realist.
No, that's called
Andy Reid is old. Let's not compare Andy Reid to Sean McVay. He doesn't have all of his. He doesn't have his best years ahead of him. Okay, he's been a journeyman. He's been doing this for a while now. I'm sure he's got a little bit of a fountain of youth. You know, thing going on, a little bit of, you know, a la Pete Carroll Jr., so to speak, as far as, you know, hey, I got this guy, you know, he's going to make us, you know, a contender for years to come, you know, so all of a sudden you're spry and energetic again. That's great. The dude is in his mid to late 60s. Let's not get it twisted, man. I don't think he wants to do this forever. Coaching is kind of a grind, okay? And who the successor is going to be, you have absolutely no idea who the successor Andy Reid is. And of course, Patrick Mahomes is going to have some influence and some say as to who that may be. That's fine. But again, we haven't even mentioned injury or taking into consideration anything with regards to that into consideration.
Well,
somebody said the contract is too long and the market changes too quickly. And by year 5 or 6 of this contract, Patrick Mahomes will not be the highest paid quarterback, regardless of what his talent shows.
No,
it's just how the league moves.
He'll be
locked into this 10-year contract. And I'll be like, man, I'm ready to renegotiate. How about you guys? And I'll be like, no, not really.
Yeah, but
and then what do you have?
If he's the best talent on the field by that at that point, then they'll gladly renegotiate with him. By
oh really?
5 or 6
they'll gladly renegotiate after giving him $500 million. Why are they going to gladly renegotiate that contract?
Number one, he wouldn't have got that. He wouldn't have got the $500 million by that point, and they will gladly renegotiate.
No, they will not gladly. Oh my gosh, listen to yourself.
If he still,
gladly renegotiate, if they have locked in one of the top three players in the league at a salary from 2020. 5 years from now, why would they gladly renegotiate that?
If that's not fair market and he's outperforming.
Oh my gosh.
If he's at the,
did you just say fair market? If that's not fair market? So wait. So ownership is going to gladly renegotiate because they have a player under contract that's not fair market value?
Probably so.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, think that over, and then when you're ready to take it back, I'll be right here.
No, there's no taking back. Now, again.
Okay, right.
There's pure disdain on your part. For whatever reason,
There's no disdain. It's just not good business from his perspective. I know it sounds great because, man, he's getting all this money, and there's all this guarantee, and there's all this commitment, but it's sports. And it's fluid. It's always moving, and you don't know what's going to happen. So to be obligated to do something for 10 years from a sporting perspective is just crazy.
Well, as I mentioned, the one drawback I do see is that in that 5 to 6 year mark, he should have
when he's not even 30 years old and he's the 7th highest paid quarterback in the NFL, he'll want to renegotiate, won't he?
Again.
Ownership will say, oh, that's cool, but we already did this in 2020, man. That's why we did that in 2020. What are you talking to me in 2025 for? With your 3 MVPs and your 2 Super Bowls. I mean,
exactly.
So what?
That's why we're
you
And then you get into the whole you signed a contract. Remember, you signed the biggest contract in the history of North American sports? Well, we're still in the middle of that.
That was 6 years
ago. Keep pushing, homie.
That was six years ago.
Yeah, that was 6 years ago.
Let's talk about it. You hate Mahomes. I can't believe that. So this would be an easy question for you. Outside of Patrick Mahomes, on the open market, who would you take ahead of Patrick Mahomes? What player? Is it Aaron Donald? Is it C.J. McCaffrey? Is it Russell Wilson? What player would you take ahead of Patrick Mahomes in the open market?
I'm not sure there's any player on an open market I would take ahead of Patrick Mahomes. But again, an open market.
Lamar Jackson?
Not Lamar Jackson. Aaron Donald is getting close. Can't take running backs or receivers. So it would have to be a quarterback or a linebacker, most likely. And I think that
you're taking Bobby Wagner over Patrick Mahomes?
I didn't say Bobby Wagner. I said a linebacker.
Okay.
And again, I said in the beginning, probably no one. But again, I would reevaluate in 3 years. Football is not a sport where you can just project for years and years and years and years and years. Sports just changes too quickly. There's injury is too much of a factor. Age is too much of a factor. This is not basketball, baseball, or hockey, man. You can't just project what someone is going to do for a long period of time.
Okay. Well, so to that point, do you say you focus on the here and now with the NFL? I got you. It makes sense. Should the Niners sign, trade, or cut Raheem Mostert or give him his trade demands? What would you do if you were John Lynch?
I would sign him if he didn't get too crazy. Let us not forget, they started the season, he was not number one on the depth chart. He worked his way up to it through injury and attrition, so that's great. And he had a lot of success doing it. To think that he is – in any way, shape, form, or fashion, the difference between him winning or not winning a Super Bowl is a little crazy. Definitely a contributing factor, but he's not one of those foundation building block pieces. So,
he's not one of those foundation building block pieces. Is that what you just said?
I did say that, yes.
Hmm. Did somebody else on the Niners have a better playoff series or playoffs than him last year? Was there somebody else on the Niners who performed better than he did? I'm not sure. I don't watch every game, but I just help me out. Was there somebody else out there setting team records other than Moisture?
Bosa, Sherman, Kittle, they all had great postseasons. Mostert had a fantastic postseason. That was great.
Okay.
I would not give him top five running back money. But that's just me. I'm not a franchise owner. We'll see what the Orcs do.
I think they'd be silly to let him go. They picked up Coleman last season. We know he's injury prone. They traded Matt Breida, their other running back, to the Dolphins. So he'll probably get hurt in week three, and we'll see the rest of the season.
Well, we know that Shanahan comes from a lineage of people that believe in plug and play at that position. So wouldn't surprise me if he didn't have that same philosophy and mentality.
And you know what your boy Terrell says about the system. You already know what that conversation is like. So you're not going to try to give me that same old system.
You take every opportunity to bring Mr. Davis into the conversation, don't you?
I mean, you already know what he has to say about that conversation. So, I mean, who do you trust? Do you trust
the tape on Sundays, or do you trust the guy who actually did something? You tell me.
Okay. Ask Quentin Porter the same question, and I think you'll get a different answer.
Once Portis was out of that system, what happened?
They faltered because they didn't understand that it wasn't your system, it was actually the player.
Ding, 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 ding. That's exactly the point I'm making. Thank you.
Right. And what I'm saying is the head coach of the 49ers comes from a family in a lineage that believes the polar opposite of that. So it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't determine that Mostert was really that valuable to them, to the team, and that they could replace him with someone
and get a
similar amount of productivity.
A similar amount of productivity. I just looking at it, because we know he was third string until the other guys came on. He was third string until the other guys couldn't get it done, you know, for whatever reason it was. Health, strategy, ability, whatever it was, they weren't able to perform like he did. So, what other backs are? I mean, Tevin Coleman is an injury pro. Breida is gone to South Beach. Who else is back there? Is there somebody else that I'm not remembering? Am I having a brain fart? Who else is back there to kind of help the squad out? Help me out.
You know, Cam, they haven't had a training camp to speak of just yet, so we don't know what they have on their roster. We're only making assumptions given what players were able to do last year and the year before. We don't know what's going on in 2020. And again, if Mostert wants Saquon Barkley money, nah, probably not. Why don't you go sit over there? Because 2 years ago, or maybe even last year, you know, your biggest contributions were on special teams.
Oh, wow.
So to think all of a sudden,
wow,
you're the second coming of Christian Jackson McCaffrey,
wow,
you would just be fooling yourself.
He just called him special team. The guy who has the most records in a 49er playoff game is now a special team player, according to Mr. Cleveland. So they have Salvin Ahmed, whoever that is, Josh Hokett, whoever that is.
Salvin Ahmed was quite a contributor for the University of Washington Huskies. So, I'm familiar with his work for sure.
Oh boy, okay. Went to the Huskies do last season. Jamichael Hasty, Jeff Wilson, Jerick McKinnon. Wasn't Jerick McKinnon a Seahawk for a moment?
He was not. He was a Viking and a good one at that. Before he had some injury issues.
Yeah,
so.
He blew his knee out last year, so okay.
He's been rehabbing, so it's stronger than ever. So, again, I don't know, again, until we have a training camp, what's going to transpire. What I do know is that paying Oster like he's Emmitt Smith at this point in his career is probably not the wisest decision.
Okay. So, you know, since you're so tight with the wallet, I mean, you and Pete Carroll, I mean, what are you guys going to do with Jadeveon Clowney? I mean, what kind of chemistry are you guys building there, having your star defensive end just dangling for the NFL to come pick up at any moment? What kind of chemistry is this building with Snyder and Carroll? How does this build chemistry? How does this give your other players confidence that, you know, when my contract's up, I may be – you don't know telling what's going to happen. I mean, how is Bobby Wagner handling seeing this and handling this situation? When his contract's up, there, you're going to let him walk or just dangle? You know, we'll see you when you come, when you make it back, and see you in September. What's going on here? Help me out.
Sure, Cam. The Seahawks have shown time and time again that if you perform for us, we'll reward you. Bobby Wagner is on his third contract. Very few players get to that one. They take care of their star players. Jadeveon Clowney has been in the organization for a year. We promised not to franchise him. We didn't. We gave up multiple players to get him.
Mm-hmm.
He performed admirably offered him a very fair, very earnest contract. He balked at it. He wanted to test his value on the free agency market. No one has bitten to this point. There have been a few contracts out there, Browns, Titans, Raiders. That's all fine. The door is always open. We're here to negotiate. We love your talents on the field. We love what you bring to the locker room. We love your disruption on the field. And we're willing to compensate you fairly for that.
It sure doesn't sound like it. It sure
doesn't. Absolutely. No. Jadeveon Clowney wants a contract like he's Michael Strahan. And he's not. He's a very good defensive player. He's disruptive. He's athletic.
There's not many guys who's 295 and 6'7 and runs a 4.5 40 or 4.6 40. There's not many.
Okay,
and here
you go, statting me to death.
I'm just saying,
but all that athletic ability does not translate on the field to someone that is a dominant defensive player of the year caliber type of player. As someone that's going to be disruptive and make your defense a lot better, absolutely.
Maybe if you ran some schemes that accentuate his talent and stop ignoring the guy and treat him like he's a third round.
You know, it's funny that same scheme with the right talent was the first team since the Chicago Bears in 85-86 to allow the fewest points and the fewest yards in consecutive years. So it's not the scheme. It's the players, it's the talent that runs the scheme.
So I've always said that.
So let's not get all twisted about that.
So he has contributed to a Stark's defense.
He has not contributed to the $20 to $22 million a year salary that he's looking for. He's contributing in a great way. But let's not get this twisted. He is by no means the best player in his position. Mm. Not even close.
Mm. Again, if you ran some schemes to accentuate his talents and to let him
go. Check this out. So when you have the best cornerback in the league, you pay him like the best cornerback in the league. When you have the best safety in the league, you pay him like the best safety in the league. When you have the best linebacker in the league, you pay him like the best linebacker in the league. So to say that we're not willing to pay players is crazy. He's just not the best player in his position by any means. And every player that I aforementioned has been the highest paid player at their position with the Hawks.
You need to take off.
Look it up.
You need to take off your
look it up.
Green and blue underwear and kind of look at football. They're dangling.
And kind of look at football. Oh, okay. So you should put your big number 90 on and draw a big 9 and a 0 on both of your cheeks and become Jadeveon Clowney's agent, spokesperson, mascot, hype man, if you want.
Hey, I bet he would get paid. I need to talk to Pete Carroll. I got a few words for him anyway. Pete Carroll.
Okay, well if you want to be the Black Drew Rosenhaus, go out there and tell me how great Jadeveon Clowney is.
Mm-hmm.
All day.
Yeah, I'm about to get up there to straighten you guys out. Because, I mean, if they were making any sense of what's going on down there in South Florida, they would have picked up the phone and called them and said, "Hey, we got a spot for you." But you know, those guys, they don't know what's going on down there. They don't know.
Hey, those guys are smart enough to draft Tua Tagovailoa. So hey, yeah.
Again, that's more evidence that they don't know what the hell's going on.
Ooh,
more
okay.
Evidence.
Wow, never did quite fully get your balance on the Tua bandwagon, did you?
Man, I'm flat. Better
get
I'm
your footing. I mean, if you're gonna be a Dolphin fan, it's been time to get your footing, man.
Man, I'm trying to
because the Tua train is in full motion. Okay.
Man, I'm trying to
pull, you get your
trying
balance.
To pull the spark plugs out of the vehicle, man, because that,
wow.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
I've already put it out there. The guy's going to get hurt within six games of playing. I've already put it out there. So
I don't know what the hell the people on Madden are thinking about. They gave him an 80 at breaking tackles. Come on, man. I don't know what the hell is that. What the hell is that? He was blown away when they gave him an 80. He was looking for a 42. They gave him an 80. Come on, man. What, that don't make no fucking sense. And here, people like Cleveland buy right into it. Oh, he's going to be this. The greatest guy from quarterback out of Alabama and the pinpoint accuracy. Come on. I can't wait to talk to your boy TJ about that either. Moving on, man. Interesting comments coming from Mr. DeSean Jackson, receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles. You want to talk about the quote that he was attributing to Hitler that apparently didn't even come from Hitler? You want to talk about that?
DeSean Jackson over the years has not proven to be the sharpest tool in the drawer. He has repeatedly put his foot in his mouth. Tremendous speed.
But does that get a pass? Did that get a
tremendous
pass?
Tremendous hands
when
he has an opportunity. Little injury prone. You know what? It's funny. It's not funny. It's a little ironic that in a period where, you know, the focal point has been Black Lives Matter, to have a black athlete, a prominent black athlete, then turn things around and face it as another minority demographic in the way that he did. The timing is a little peculiar, and the direction of it is a little misguided, in my opinion. But again, I don't really consider DeSean Jackson to be like a person of influence or great intellect or great, you know, vision or focus that's going to, you know, carry our people to the next level by any stretch of the imagination. If, you know, if he plays a full season without blowing his hand at least three times, that's pretty much the most you can ask for. To expect him to be some type of whiz on history and what certain people have gone through or haven't gone through, and to have some type of frame of reference or context to that, that's a little bit too much to ask from DeSean. I'm not overly surprised in his comments, but I think he'll have to pay the price for it. We'll see how that goes.
So he went to Cal Poly.
With the University of Cal.
Foul football factory down here in Long Beach. Went to University of Cal, which in Berkeley, which is not a school for, it's not Sharpless, okay? It's not, you don't go there strictly on athletics.
I didn't say he went to an alternative university or a university that you know, didn't have high accolades for their academic acumen. I'm saying that he, as a product, I mean, Marshawn Lynch went to Cal too. So let's not get all, you know, high on our horse about the academic, you know, standards that cats are pulling out of Cal. Let's not make it seem like he went to Harvard or something, you know, okay. So.
Okay. All right. But what I'm saying is, I mean, you get some stuff by osmosis, right? Just by being around smarter people, you're going to become smarter yourself, right? And we're not talking about a 22, a 23, a 24-year-old DeSean Jackson. We're talking about a 30-year-old DeSean Jackson, which lends more credence to your point that him not being the sharpest tool in the shed. But I'm going to ask you this again. Does he get a pass because you're more familiar, or you lean towards his speed and his catching ability versus his knowledge and wisdom that he's sharing with people? Does he get a pass for that?
He doesn't get a pass for that, Cam, but he probably will not feel the complete total brunt of his misguided words because of his talent, if that makes sense. They're not gonna banish him from the league.
But is he going to be able to just avoid these comments like he never said them and just say, I'm really sorry, and send out the press release that his agent wrote for him and, you know, read that out loud on YouTube? I mean, that's not, no, he isn't going to pass like that.
He actually spoke up on Instagram. So what do you think about, what about the words, you know, that he attributed to Hitler that wasn't Hitler's words? I mean, what do you think? What do you? Twitter is crazy, bro. Twitter is nuts, man. They got him. They got him with the Hitler mustache and hairdo already, man. They're cold.
It's a problem. It's the number one problem with social media, Cam, is that it comes out to millions and millions of people, and no one vets it, no one proofreads it, no one fact checks it, and you can just say or do whatever you want. And depending on your level of popularity, sometimes millions of people will read it. And even if only a couple of people read it, some people will read it, be offended, be appalled, and retweet it to everyone. So again, it still has the ability to go out to the whole world. So that in and of itself doesn't make what he did justifiable. It doesn't mean that he had to have even meant it or even know what it means. I mean, we saw a perfect example. We saw during the Kaepernick thing years ago, we saw Roddy Harrison come out and say, oh, you know, Kaepernick's not even black. It's like, oh, man, okay. Did you just really say that in, like, to the whole world? It's like, you, no one had to, there's no, like, social media is such that you don't have to go through any channels of approval.
Right.
To say or do anything, you can just do it, and then whatever happens is whatever happens, right?
All right, so let's talk about the validity of what was posted, whether they came from Hitler or not. Now I'm going to read this to you. Because the white Jews know that the Negroes are the real children of Israel, and to keep Americans to keep America secret, that the Jews will blackmail Americas. They will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they were. The white citizens of America will be terrified to know that all this time they've been mistreating and discriminating and lynching the children of Israel.
So you don't have to know a whole lot about Adolf Hitler to know that probably his siding with the African American is a little peculiar in and of itself. I think the Olympics in Berlin would show it would paint a different picture when Jesse Owens won the 4 gold medals. Wasn't too happy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Clearly, it doesn't sound like he did his, you know, didn't have any history classes over there at Cal. Don't know what he was taking for those 3 years, but clearly it wasn't history or religion, right?
Right.
Or not a strong emphasis on either one of those two disciplines, right?
So it's very interesting. Like you say, he probably won't take the full brunt because he is going to be given a pass. We'll see how the Eagles, you know, fortunately for the Eagles, it's not, you know, it's not week two, three, or four where they might have to take more drastic measures. It's an off season essentially. So even if they suspended them two weeks or 2 months, I mean, what is he missing, right? I don't know. Should he be fined? Should he be penalized? It'd be interesting to see, especially how they handled the Riley Cooper situation a few years ago, with nothing more than being sent home from training camp, which most NFL players want to be sent home from training camp. So that wasn't a big penalty there itself. So it'll be interesting to see how things transpire. My question to you about the NFL itself, are you confident the NFL season will start on time? Last week, the players voted to – they narrowed the preseason games down to from 4 games to 2 games. Then the NFL players' PA suggested they have no preseason games whatsoever. I think that'll be a terrible mistake. What's your thoughts on that? Do you, considering the situation, do you see the season started on time?
At present, the way things are, I definitely see the season starting on time with two caveats. One, I think the NFL has to expand the rosters just for the mere fact that it's not if, but when players come down with COVID and how many players are affected, you have to have contingency plans in place to protect against that. And then you also have to make sure that everyone is on board with what it is that they're doing. I think everyone is doing different things, so it's hard to say, it's not universal what every organization is doing. So to have a season start on time where certain teams have, I don't want to say unfair advantages, but take, precautions and things a little bit differently than other teams, and there maybe are in cities where, things are a little bit more severe with regards to statistically what the coronavirus is doing in that area, you have to be able to kind of mitigate those type of situations. So we have absolutely no idea what we're getting ourselves into with regards to whether they'll have an NFL season or not. But if things remain the same and they expand the rosters, I think it's conceivable that the season will start on time.
Well, expanding the rosters would be a good idea. With their NFL policies of social distancing, it's going to be impossible to make the season come through, pull through. With their policies of training, the team not working out together, that's just going to make for ugly football the first couple of weeks. So I'm certainly hopeful that the NFL gets started on time. We'll see. It's going to be a much different world than it's been. So I remain hopeful that it will start on time, regardless of what the CDC and the doctors are suggesting. One final question about the NFL and their proposed playing the Lift Every Voice and Sing after the national anthem prior to week 1 football games. What does that do for you? Does that show any solitude or inclusion, inclusiveness of other players? And what does that do for Mr. Cleveland?
It's an interesting gesture, Cam. I think that for the most part, the NFL is kind of in a very tough situation because let's rewind. Back when this whole taking a knee to bring light and attention to police brutality towards people of color in this country, it wasn't taken very well. It wasn't taken. Let's not forget. Football is really, really big in Texas and the Deep South. And their mentality for what is going on is far different than other parts of the country. So they have taken, in 2020, they have taken the stance that even if they are alienating quite a large portion of their fan base, they're still going to be vocal and trying to be proactive and ahead of the curve. So I think this is an interesting position that they've taken to have Lift Every Voice and Sing being played instead of the national anthem, wherein 4 years ago you were ostracized for taking a knee during the national anthem, all of a sudden we're going to just flip it and, you know, have them hail your Jackson version out, you know, play it through the intercom. It's like, that's kind of weird, you know.
To be clear, I think they're playing it, they'll play it after the national anthem. They'll play Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Okay,
not in conjunction with. Yeah, not
appreciate the clarification for that. Okay, so then you're kind of trying to be inclusive. Okay. Again, I think that they kind of don't really know what to do other than to, A, apologize for, you know, being somewhat closed-minded.
We already know apologies not coming.
Right. So this is their, in my opinion, this is a way of trying to apologize without actually saying we're wrong and we're sorry. I mean, to a certain extent, Goodell has said that we were wrong before. Just haven't apologized. So it is what it is. It's a nice gesture. You know, it's a nice gesture. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. I think so the way the story reads is they're going to play it for week one. They're going to play Lift Every Voice and Sing after the national anthem. Now, if they were serious about this gesture of inclusion, it would be for the remainder of the season. They played all season long after the national anthem, before, in conjunction with, however you want to put it. Not just 1 week. 1 week, I mean, come on, we'll forget about it. They'll play this. That'll be just on a regular season. That'll be September 9 that they play it. And by September 16, and everybody forgot about it. Like, it won't be.
But again, Cam, let's wait to make judgment until we see how this is received in some of those stadiums that they're playing it. I think that it's, and again,
it won't be quite as powerful.
And then again, listen now, it won't be quite as powerful of message because how many fans are going to be in the stands, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like you're doing this to like 80 to 100,000 people.
Yeah.
You're doing this to like 5,000 people. So, you know, it's not going to have the same dramatic effect, right?
Yeah, good point. And then another thing, too, is, I mean, how many people, like you say, how many people are going to be in the stands? And then are the TV networks going to even air the national anthem? Like, if they get a hold of them playing Lift Every Voice and Sing, you know, through week four, by week three, are they going to even be airing that? So the sign of inclusion is kind of muted because nobody but who's in the stadium, the 12,000 people that actually go to the game, is going to be hearing that. You know what I mean? So it's going to be muted. It's going to be muted. So would that even matter again? So, well, I guess there are some things that we're going to have to see how it plays out and see how it's going to be heard. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, man, we're going to talk about This Week in History, and then we're going to get into the Maya Moore story. Have you heard about that one?
I have.
All right, so we'll touch on that here in a moment. What's good, fans? What's good, Mr. Cleavon? Week 96. Hello. Week 96, man, this day in history. Let's go through it. Dr. Daniel Hale Williams completed the first successful open-heart surgery at Provident Hospital in Chicago way back in
1893. Wow.
Althea Gibson, 1957, won Wimbledon's champion, the first black woman to win women's championship in Wimbledon. 1997, July 9, Mike Tyson was banned from boxing and fined $3 million for biting the ear of Evander Holyfield. Do you remember where you were when you saw that?
I absolutely do. I remember I was at a friend's house, and I was like, why is Evander Holyfield jumping around in the middle of the ring like a country bumpkin, man? What's wrong with that dude?
Come to find out, he was jumping around in the middle of the room like, "Cut him up, he doesn't got a fingerprint." That was the last thing that was that was the last reason that I was shot. That he was jumping around in the middle of the ring like that. That he got his fingerprint. It was that. It was like once you finally found that out, it was like, oh my god, think of the restraint that dude showed after getting his ear bit off.
Getting his ear bit off. Okay, that's one thing. Getting your ear bit off and coming back and fighting, but you bite somebody's ear in a fucking fight.
Bite it off.
Come on, Mike.
They just bite it. You bit it off. It spit out.
Man, well, that's some crazy shit, man. And they talking about, do you want to see these guys fight again, man? Tell Mike Tyson's training. Evander's always says he's always in shape. Do you want to see these guys fight again?
Dude, of course not, man.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, it would be a spectacle, but I don't really, like, I would go to see it. Again, I will cover it and request the credentials and everything.
Shame on you.
I mean, come on.
Shame on you,
it would be a I would go for the spectacle of it. Not that I actually want to sit down and watch the fight, man, but it would be such a spectacle. You have to be part of it if you can. You have to. Like, I just could. Come on. You got to be part of that. But do I want to see that? No. Am I handing either one of the pens to say, okay, sign on the dotted line so you can get in the ring? No, I'm not doing that for either one of them. On this day, a few years ago, 4 years ago, Serena Williams won her 22nd Grand Slam title. I think she's just a few off the pace to become the most Grand Slams ever. Well, hopefully
just one. Just the one.
Hopefully she can get that done. Cleavon, you said you heard about the Maya Moore story. And what an inspiration this woman has been for the WNBA, women's basketball, America, the world, to sacrifice her career. To take some time and donate her efforts to get somebody out of jail. I can only imagine how Jonathan Irons feels. I can only imagine. To know that she's quit basketball to work on getting him out from help with the justice reform because he was wrongly convicted of burglary and assault, and he was given 50 years. He served 22 of these years before she was able to get him out, man. What a tremendous, tremendous effort she has shown right there. To tremendous display of selflessness, sacrifice, willing to give back. I mean, I can't think of a better story so far this year. What's your thoughts on Maya Moore? By the way, Maya Moore, since just a tidbit I found out while kind of doing some research for a story you can see on whatsgoodinsports.com. Maya Moore, since starting playing in high school, has not went two consecutive seasons without winning the championship. Let me repeat that for you, Mr. Cleveland. Since starting high school in the ninth grade, has not went two consecutive seasons without winning a championship. How amazing is that? 150 games won in college, they lost four. I mean, come on, man. Come on. What's your thoughts on Maya Moore and her efforts, man?
I definitely applaud her convictions and putting her beliefs before a lot of other things, material things, accolades, athletic prowess.
just the ability and the vision and the, again, just the belief in what it is that she's doing to make that kind of sacrifice is extremely unusual. It takes a very special person to do that. And hats off to her, man. Most people wouldn't be able to do it. So leaving the difference between right and wrong to that extent is enormous.
Yeah, kudos to her, man. That was she deserves a prize of some sort for her efforts. It's remarkable. I can't say enough, man. Kudos to her. Your guy Colin Kaepernick signs a deal with Disney here last week, I believe it was. Does this say to you for certain that he doesn't want to play football anymore?
Absolutely not. Backup and contingency plans, and also leveraging his brand at a time when it's higher than ever. The chances of him playing in the NFL are, I don't want to say slim to none, but not great. The NFL is open to the idea of him playing without persecution, which they weren't before. So that kind of opens the door. But with all due respect to Colin Kaepernick, he has not played NFL football in 4 years. It's just entirely too long to take off. And then he's not a wrestler, man. This is not the WWF, man. You can't just not do it for 4 years and then just come back and you're just a star again. I mean, it's just too hard. The game moves too fast. The players are too fast and strong. You haven't been doing it. It's just, you're not at the tip top of your craft. So even if someone gives me the opportunity, I mean, you got backups like Jalen Hurts now, man. He's not better than Jalen Hurts. He's not better than most teams' backup. I mean, yes and no. Yeah, when he's on his game and he's, hot and fresh and, flinging it around, in his best of best, in his best light. But
6 years ago?
Yeah. If you have a, if you're rooting for a team and they say, okay, Colin Kaepernick's going to play the next 6 weeks, you're terrified. You're not optimistic about what your team is going to be 6 games from then, right? You're like, oh.
So what's up with your boy? I'm just gonna call him Shady Carroll. We call him Shady Carroll from now on. Blowing smoke up the nation's butt, saying, "Oh yeah, we considered it." Well, that's something we would do. What's up with your boy Pete, man?
Pete has been known to be very supportive of the black community. Going back to his days at SC when he used to ride around, with the gang members and, go through the darkest Compton at midnight and talk to people and, hand out.
That may have happened once or twice. Let's see that as a weekend thing, okay?
I mean, I saw it on 60 Minutes. I thought it was extraordinary. I mean, just the humanitarian aspect that, he brings to things and, having a locker room where, guys like Marshawn Lynch and, Richard Sherman are the leaders, that kind of goes to the point of, him being woke. Pete's woke around here, so.
I asked the wrong person about that fucking Pete Carroll question. I asked the wrong person about that. My goodness gracious. The NBA, as we know, we're going to the bubble. I don't know, have you seen any of the pictures of Rajon Rondo comparing his 4-star hotel room to Motel 6? And what's your thoughts on that?
Well, Rajon Rondo has had multiple seasons of making $10+ million a year, has made well over $130 million in contract money in his career. So perhaps
his standards are a little bit higher with regards to the accommodation than other people. Hopefully, given the set of circumstances, he can kind of come to his senses and realize that things would be different if there wasn't a pandemic going around the world called the coronavirus, COVID-19, that perhaps makes his situation a little less comfortable than he would like. But hopefully he can grin and bear it. He's not camping out in the wilderness, out in the woods in a tent with an open fire. I think he'll be okay once he kind of comes back down to reality.
Yeah, we'd love to think they'll be okay. But how about the WNBA having to apparently do their own laundry? They're eating out of the summer camp box lunches for dinner and lunch. I mean, what do you think about the accommodations and the disparity accommodations from the four-star, four-and-a-half-star hotels to maybe the actual Motel 6?
The disparity is tough, given how far they've been able to come in such a short period of time. I mean, let us not forget that their salaries increased dramatically with this last collective bargaining agreement that they were able to strike. And so they felt that they were kind of somewhat getting their, not just due, but definitely being more appreciated than they were previously. And then it feels like you're just right back to being a second-class citizen once things get a little tough. But, hopefully they'll be able to, weather this storm and, kind of understand that the amount of people that are going to tune in to watch NBA games is dramatically higher than the number of people that are going to tune in to watch WNBA games for whatever reason. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just saying that's how it's going to be. So not surprising that their accommodations are a little bit more meager than the NBA players, the Giannis Antetokounmpos and LeBron James and James Harden's of the world.
Sure. Some of that stuff should have been a little bit, they should have been prepared, I would say, whether it's the WNBA or it's the hotel. The hotel know that you're going to have eyes on them. Why not get that stuff cleaned up and be ready for some of your guests that you might not have had in the last 3 months, bringing also their own set of eyes and a bunch of dollars to your facility. Why not kind of take care of those people and be ready for them with the roll out the red carpet for them? That's kind of shame on their part. I guess maybe shame on the WNBA's part for not checking out the facilities and ensuring that it was up to standards for them, for the women. But hopefully they'll get that straight up here in the next short amount of time. Cleveland, we have the MLS. Their tournament's already started. Right now we have opening day coming up in less than 2 weeks. Which are you more excited to see, opening day or MLS complete their tournament?
Definitely more excited to see Major League Baseball get opening day started. Just a traditionalist, all baseball a little bit closer to soccer, to be perfectly honest. I've never been a big soccer follower. Of course, Seattle Sounders have won multiple MLS championships. So, I have, followed them for brief periods. I watch the World Cup when it comes around, but definitely still more on the baseball side of things. So more excited to see how that goes. And plus it's unique in the fact that the season is so much shorter. And we really don't know how it's going to favor any team, really. I mean, we have our preconceived notions about it, but no one really knows. Kept the season, by 60%. The teams that were, going to be really great and are built for long haul, I mean, there's no long haul. I mean, teams that were, could be good for a short, brief period of time but didn't have longevity, don't have to have longevity now. So we don't really know how things are going to transpire, but definitely more curious to see how the Major League Baseball season unfolds in MLS.
Okay. Since you talked about the
the Major League Baseball, MLB, having a shortened season, does the shortened season give the Seattle Mariners a chance to do anything in the playoffs or get to the playoffs?
I definitely think it does, and I was definitely more optimistic before hearing that seven players already have been tested positive. So, again, that's a third of your roster. For the season, so I think the difference between baseball and football is that they have minor league systems to kind of add more players when they need them, but that's not really even in play like it normally is, so they'll have to have more players as well just because people are going to get it, but yeah, it gives them as good a chance as anybody, because no one really knows what it's going to be like to have players in and out of the, of the lineup. Nobody knows how it's going to affect their top end pitchers, not pitching as much. So no one really knows. So with the unknown factor, yeah, they have as good a chance as anybody.
Okay, and that's the best chance they've had in the year. So I guess that's a step up there. Cleveland, we looked at the top quarterbacks. We looked at the top running backs. We looked at the top receivers. We looked at the most of the NFC. This week, our final division in the NFC preview for 2020, NFC West. Now, I have the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Rams, and the Cardinals. That's how I believe the division would finish. And outside of homerism, I can't understand how you have the Seahawks ahead of the Niners. And then can you explain the Cardinals over the Rams for me, please? Again, I think that's a little bit more hatred, but I'd like to hear your opinion.
Sure. Two things. Number one, the Seahawks beat the 49ers last year. They actually beat them twice. The first time they actually counted it. The second time they were robbed by an instant replay.
Oh,
okay. A blade of grass. So to say that the Seahawks aren't as good as the 49ers is ludicrous. The Seahawks have gotten much better than they were last year. I don't think the 49ers are as good as they were last year. And the Seahawks have a very favorable schedule going forward. The 49ers do not. So that's why I said that the Seahawks will win the division. With regards to the Cardinals, I'm not sure if you heard, but Kyler Murray, their sensation at quarterback from last year, they went and got him a nice, shiny new toy named DeAndre Hopkins, quite possibly one of the top three receivers in the NFL. It's going to change their fortunes dramatically. With regards to the Los Angeles Rams, they were built to, win at all costs 2 years ago. They didn't, and they're paying the price for it. So a lot of the players they had previously, they don't have anymore. Their Caldwell, Todd Gurley, he's gone. Quite a few of the other players at the skill positions are gone. They don't really have a contingency plan for that. So the NFC West is, quite possibly one of the toughest divisions in football. So, let's not cry too many tears for them.
Toughest division.
I'm not saying anything bad about them by saying they'll be in last. They play in a really tough division. If they were playing the AFC East, I would have a different opinion altogether. But they play in the NFC West, so it's much harder to win that division.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow. If I didn't know any better, I think you were taking shots at Sean McVay and the leadership team with the Los Angeles Rams. So if I didn't know any better, I think you were taking shots.
There's no shots. That guy was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
I know.
Extraordinary.
And now you have him last in the division.
that's just how quickly the NFL can change. The NFL stands for not for long if you don't continue to keep pace with the other teams around you.
The shiny new toy that they got running around, running routes down in Arizona, not sure how that helps the defense when Arizona needs to stop somebody.
Oh, boy, you want to know how it helps the defense? Because your team is ahead, and the offense of the other team has to do other things. They can't just do whatever they want. They actually have to score points to get back into the game or even have an opportunity to win the game. So their game plans and schemes change. So your defense can, you know, adjust accordingly. You're not always playing from a deficit perspective. That's how it helps.
Well, that's very well put, sir. Very well put. Let's see if it actually materializes on the field. I don't believe so. I have the Cardinals at last in that division. I have the Rams ahead of them. And as I stated, I have the previous team that won the NFC last season winning that division ahead of the Seahawks. Now, it might be a 11-5, a 10-6 season. Once again, I grant you it's a tough, difficult division that these two teams will battle it out like they have the last few years, but I do have the Niners. Excuse me, a superior running game, superior defense. Coaching is right on. Coaching has to be, you know, I think that's even right there. And there might be even a heads up, or Niners might have the advantage of front office personnel between Lynch and Snyder. So I got the Niners pulling this one, pulling out that division this season.
Wow.
And we'll see how that transpires.
You have John Lynch being a better front office guy than John Snyder. Is that what I was hearing?
Yeah, that's exactly what you just heard. The team went to the Super Bowl last year. Yeah. I'm not sure if you watched the game in February, but
yeah,
there was one team in the Super Bowl, and the other team didn't make the playoffs. I mean, what are we talking about?
I'm sorry, what team didn't make the playoffs?
Or was excused early from the playoffs, okay?
Oh, okay, so they lost in the round before the 49ers won the NFC Championship, so...
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure what you're saying. I think you're just talking to be talking, and that's cool. John Lynch being a better GM than John Snyder, that's been to like the playoffs like 9 years in a row. I don't know. It's whatever. It's whatever, man.
How many years did it take Lynch to get his team to the Super Bowl? Like three, right? I think it took like three. So I'm gonna go with Lynch, right? I'm gonna go with Lynch,
okay.
And the guy who most recently did it. How about that? And
it's good to go with the person that most recently did it, and it's good to know that you can go both ways with this philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Like most recently did it, or you know who did it best 47 years ago, like the Dolphins, when they went undefeated. You're still holding on to that crush.
Aren't you banned from talking Dolphins, though? I don't know why you keep bringing them up. We banned you from talking Dolphins.
You can go with most recent or greatest, you know, half a century ago. It's up to you, man.
I'm going to get you a buzzer.
You're versatile. You're showing your versatility, and that's cool.
That's going to be versatile. Get you a buzzer. So when it starts to come out, I can hit the buzzer to remind you, no Dolphins talk for you, fella.
Yeah. John Lynch was a heck of a safety. You know, general manager on par with Snyder. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it rolling, homie.
All right, this week, so got a scenario that we got to break down. And Mr. Stump Cleveland, this is what we're going to do this week. We're going to talk Super Bowl appearances, and we're talking consecutive Super Bowl appearances.
Okay.
So this one actually surprised me, actually, once I did the tallies. Which do you want to go first? So we got AFC, NFC. Super Bowl appearances or consecutive Super Bowl appearances?
Let's go Super Bowl appearances first, Cam.
Which conference? Not which conference. Which division, AFC and NFC, has the most Super Bowl appearances?
Which division has the most Super Bowl appearances?
And you can give me AFC and NFC to make it easy on you.
Wait, so you're giving me a choice of which division is it?
Which division in the AFC and NFC has the most Super Bowl appearances?
Okay.
NFC South, NFC North, NFC East, NFC West. And obviously the same in the AFC. NFC South, NFC East, NFC North, NFC West.
Cam, it is the AFC and the NFC East.
AFC and NFC East. You are right on both accounts.
I know it.
Well, excuse me. NFC East. Yeah, you're right on both accounts, actually. I was trying to give it to NFC West because we were talking about the West, but when things broke down, it was not. Those were two number one teams. Ding, 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 ding. Number one division. Who was number two in each division?
Number the second division with the most Super Bowl appearances is going to be the NFC North and the AFC West.
No. It's the NFC West, and AFC West. See, I wouldn't have guessed the AFC West. I didn't. I was kind of surprised. I was surprised by that actually, once I actually tallied that up. But Denver has been there a bunch of times. The Raiders have been there a bunch of times.
Denver's got the five. Raiders got the five.
The Chargers
got the one.
The Chargers. Kansas City's been there three times.
Two.
Twice.
Oh, no, right. They lost one and won one. Right.
Yeah. So I was surprised by that. All right. So you got that correct. You got the Super Bowl appearances. Now give me the two in the AFC and the NFC, the two divisions with the most consecutive Super Bowl appearances, meaning – like the Seahawks went, what, 13 or 14? Like the Packers went back to back.
Consecutive appearances in the Super Bowl.
I didn't say wins, I said consecutive appearances.
Appearances. It is once again, Cam, the AFC and the NFC East.
It is the AFC, four teams with multiple Super Bowl, consecutive Super Bowl appearances, and the NFC with multiple Super Bowl appearances. So, Mr. Cleavon, now can you tell me which division or conference has the most consecutive Super Bowl appearances?
What?
Which conference, NFC or AFC, has the most consecutive Super Bowl appearances?
They both play in the Super Bowl every year. You have to clarify your question.
No. Which conference has the most consecutive, we talk about consecutive Super Bowl appearances? Which conference
right,
has
but,
seen,
but the Super Bowl has, the Super Bowl consists of the AFC and the NFC winner every year.
True. Which team, which conference has the most the teams with consecutive Super Bowl appearances? Denver went to the Super Bowl back to back in the 80s. They did it also in the 90s.
Well,
which conference has the most? Which conference has the most teams with?
That has to be the AFC. I mean, Buffalo went 4 straight years.
That is that your answer?
Yeah.
No, that's not right. That's not right. The NFC East has the Cowboys went back to back. The NFC, to answer your question, it's the NFC. It has more teams with consecutive Super Bowl appearances. It's 12-9, and it's 12-9 in that respect.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying the way that you were trying to ask the question, but now it makes more sense. Which conference has teams with the most teams that went consecutive years to the Super Bowl? Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So but you answered the original question. Good job out of you. Who has the most Super Bowl appearances? Did you answer overall which team has the most Super Bowl appearances? Which division has the most Super Bowl appearances overall?
Overall, who has the most Super Bowl appearances would have to be the New England Patriots. 10.
All right, and we're going to end the conversation right there. We're going to end that one right there. thank you guys for tuning in once again, fans. I'm gonna leave it with this quote. If there were camera phones back in the day, the biggest athletes in the world would have a lot of explaining to do. Mr. Kobe Bryant.
So very true.
So very true, Mr. Clairvoyant there. Fans, as always, I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Voice of the Fans podcast. You guys make this show what it is today. Please subscribe, rate, and review our show. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the baddest podcast in all the land. Thank you guys for tuning in. And thank you, as always, for making our voice your choice. Please want to have a good one, Chief.
You too, bro. Take soon.
Later.
Hey, Marcellus Smalley right here. Thank you for making our voice your choice. You know what I'm saying? Let me come here, B-Dawg. Let me get something.